Move on to our next case, which is United States v. Manny. Mr. Casey.
May it please the Court, Tim Casey on behalf of Appellant Mark Manny. This case presents really a single issue, and the question is whether the trial judge erred as a matter of law when she denied Mark Manny's motions for mistrial and for severance. The answer very simply is yes, because this trial involved, as in the words of the Supreme Court, an unacceptable risk of impermissible factors coming into play. And those impermissible factors we can break down into two groups. The first group is the jurors' fears of the gallery. The second group is Patterson's misbehaviors. The jurors' fears of the gallery were well documented.
But your client didn't object to Patterson's being brought back.
He did not, Your Honor.
Well, wasn't that a mistake? Maybe he thought that by contrast he was so civilized, in contrast to Patterson, that the jury would be sympathetic to him.
That's possible. The district court certainly noted that in her opinion, denying the motion for a new trial. I think that was speculative on the district court's part. It strikes me that Mr. Manny played a bit part even as the government charged the case. And so to the extent that Mr. Manny's role in the case or his appearance at trial would appear to be more minor and more civilized, it seems to me those would be more important as sentencing factors.
That's a lawyer's strategic judgment.
It could be, Your Honor, but in this particular case, Mr. Patterson escalated his behavior when he returned. He had never given any indication before he returned to the trial that there would be physical violence.
Did that happen? Did Manny's lawyer object?
He did. Move for a mistrial, Your Honor. And it's that culmination. The jurors' fears of the gallery, for whatever reason, we think perhaps could have been cured with curative instructions and a voir dire of the jury. It's when you put Patterson's escalated behavior, not just the verbal outbursts, but the actual physical attack on his lawyers in front of the jury, when you put that into this case.
Had Manny objected before the attack?
To what, Your Honor?
To Patterson's presence in the courtroom.
He had not.
So when did he first object to?
To Patterson's presence? At the moment, or just after Mr. Patterson physically assaulted
after
his lawyer.
Attack.
That's correct.
After the attack was when he moved for mistrial.
That's right. And Mr. Patterson, of course, as Your Honor knows, was not in the trial for the first 9 days.
Right.
And the condition that the trial judge put on Mr. Patterson's presence was that he was to give the proper assurances to the trial judge that he would behave appropriately. Mr. Manny, before trial, and this happened before the trial, and so Mr. Manny, in our opinion, was entitled to rely on the trial judge's attempt to maintain the decorum of the courtroom while also giving Mr. Patterson the opportunity to...
See, but this not requesting a severance when, you know, he shows out at the pretrial conference and yells, and he's frequently interrupting the lawyers that this is May 25th. And then he gets removed from court on the 26th. He's doing the same thing. Then a jury comes. We bring in 50 or 60 citizens. He shows out again. She has to dismiss an entire panel. Then he comes back again. Obviously, he comes back the next day. He hasn't learned anything. He flies into a rage, and he's gone again. I mean, I don't understand why Manny didn't ask for a severance then. I mean, talk about somebody that's a high risk of showing out.
Your Honor,
I mean, of course, I know this doesn't really have relevance to this case, but I mean, I'm not aware of any case where two jury panels had to be dismissed back to back because of behavior of a defendant. That's highly unusual.
It is unusual, Your Honor. It is, of course, that much more unusual that Mr. Patterson then leapt up and assaults his attorneys at the trial. And we understand that it's unusual. He didn't move for the severance before the trial. But again, the trial judge directs at that point that Mr. Patterson will not be allowed back into this trial until he gives the appropriate assurances. And so even to the extent that it's an oversight on the part of Mr. Manny not to move for severance based on verbal outbursts, when Mr. Patterson comes back and he escalates his behavior to the point of physical violence against his own attorneys.
Was there ever severance, or did Patterson go through to the end of the trial?
Patterson went through the end of the trial.
Was he convicted too?
He was, and his appeal is just now pending, Your Honor. He's just...
After this incident, when he attacks the defense counsel, she then does an individual voir dire of each juror.
That's right.
And the one juror who was concerned and gave kind of a, an equivocal answer was excused from the jury. Right.
That's correct.
And Manny didn't move to strike any other jurors.
That's
so
correct.
So when he loses the motion for severance, he doesn't move to strike any other jury.
That's right, Your Honor. But it's our contention that this inherent prejudice standard, and this goes back to cases like Estes against Texas, the 11th Circuit has held in Woods against Duggar, that when you have this inherent prejudice in a trial, it doesn't matter what the voir dire says. We don't challenge the sufficiency of the voir dire on this appeal, and we noted that in our reply brief. Mm-hmm. What we say is that there was such an unacceptable risk that these impermissible factors would have influenced the minds of the jury that there is no way that we can continue to operate under the fiction that we typically operate under for purposes of efficiency.
Closing argument, what did the prosecutor say about the relationship between Patterson and Manny?
Your Honor, the argument throughout was that Patterson was a gang leader, Manny was a gang member doing the bidding of Mr. Patterson. I don't know that there was a suggestion that there was any greater relationship. But of course,
no, that's what I meant by relationship. So even in the closing argument, was the prosecutor still pairing them?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And this is where the jurors' fears, for whatever reason, come back into play in this case, because the story that's being told by the government is these guys are gang members. They're Patterson is directing this gang activity, and Manny is following. The fears of the jurors then, when they think that they see gang signs, and when Patterson leaps up and assaults his attorneys, they've paired these two in their minds, and they're not to be separated. And now they have what we might even call irrational fears of the gallery. But they have those fears, and that just sort of emphasizes in their mind that this government story is true. Manny was entitled, as all criminal defendants are, to get up on that stand and tell his story. And his story was that he thought Patterson was a good guy, and he was doing Patterson a favor. He didn't know there was marijuana in the bag, and he didn't know these were real guns. Now, however implausible that story may seem, that is an issue for the jury. And the government is entitled to try to undermine that story in any number of ways, cross-examination, put Patterson on the stand, bring in other witnesses. They are not entitled to undermine that story by having Patterson leap up and assault his lawyer so that the jury now is thinking to itself, how could anyone possibly have believed that this was a good guy and he was just doing him a favor?
Well, the government doesn't undermine it, but you're saying he's precluded from advancing that as a theory because of Patterson, right?
I'm saying at that point there's no possible way that the court can say with any confidence that the jury is determining this case on the evidence. That's
now,
right.
Mr. Casey, would it be your position that if with the moving for the mistrial as a result of the... which occurred after the attack on the counsel?
That's right.
That standing alone, is enough to cause a mistrial?
I believe so, Your Honor. But coupled with the jurors' fears of the gallery.
I appreciate that. That proceeded in the 2 days before.
That's right.
Right.
But yes, that alone, the assault alone, is enough. If there are no further questions, I'll reserve my time for rebuttal.
Ms. Mecklenburg?
May it please the Court, my name is Sherry Mecklenburg, and I represent the United States. The trial court did not abuse its discretion in denying the appellant's motions for a mistrial and for a severance. On two occasions, the trial...
I don't understand the judge's behavior in this case. I do not understand how she could permit this kind of these shenanigans.
Well, Your Honor, I don't know that the judge actually permitted these shenanigans. I think that the judge was careful to address...
Why didn't she expel the audience and have, they could go and they could watch the trial on TV or something, right?
Your Honor, the record shows that there wasn't anything in particular about the audience that was particularly hostile. On more than one occasion, the judge and even Mr. Patterson's counsel commented that there was nothing unusual about the audience. In this case, we actually have evidence in the record as to what the jurors thought about the audience. In the cases cited by the appellant, we had no evidence in those records. But here, except for the one juror and the voir dire, the jurors weren't particularly concerned about the audience.
I'm not talking about the jurors' reaction. I'm talking about what some of the spectators were doing. I don't understand how a judge can tolerate that.
There was one incident, Your Honor, in the record where a spectator was actually, where the marshal brought to the judge's attention that a spectator was acting inappropriately, and the judge did bar that spectator from the building after that incident. But there was no evidence that the jurors actually were aware of it.
Then what was this one juror concerned about if she wasn't aware of it?
The one juror who brought the spectator's conduct to the attention of the court, she started out by bringing up the fact that there were some signs that were exchanged between Mr. Manny and the spectators. She brought up the fact that there were young black men in the courtroom whom she thought were dressed in a way that made her uncomfortable. She also at the same time brought up that she had a vacation and that she was concerned about the length of the trial. All of the other jurors, however, had no concerns about the spectators. Some of them characterized the spectators as students.
Students.
And in addition, you know, the trial court gave the jurors here a perfect out if they really did feel some fear in the courtroom. The trial court on two occasions offered the jurors an out by giving them a voir dire.
Is that a voir dire in the open court?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think it was back in the chambers.
And it was one-on-one, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, Your Honor.
With counsel present?
Yes, and I believe Mr. Manny was also present during those voir dires. And as you point out, at no time did Mr.
Manny was physically present in the room with the jurors for the voir dire?
I believe so, Your Honor. I believe that that was the record. And as you point out, Mr. Manny did not ask to, Mr. Manny or his counsel did not ask to excuse any other jurors other than the jurors who were excused.
You said that this was the only juror who was concerned, and that you kind of suggest there was just one spectator, but that's not true. The other jurors said they could, you know, they could perform their duties, but they expressed concerns also about gang signs and. Staring at the jury, making them nervous.
Most of
freaked out by two people wearing sunglasses.
That juror also said that the juror stated that there was nothing about
the judge. Did the judge make? Is there anything on the record? The judge presumably was looking at the spectators. Did she say anything about what she saw?
There was at least one comment where the judge opined that there was nothing unusual or hostile about the spectators, and Mr. Patterson's attorney agreed with her. And in fact, I think they had a discussion about there were two older females in the spectator section, that the one juror who was excused, juror 85, had also brought up these two older black females.
And was there any thought, and I appreciate that the trial court did the voir dire with Mr. Manny in the room and his lawyer, did the trial court ever just consider having counsel in the jurors? You know, when people are saying that they're intimidated by spectators, sometimes having a co-defendant in the judge's chambers so close, so visually close and physically close to jurors is a concern. Was that ever considered?
I don't know, Your Honor. I didn't see anything in the record that discussed that.
All right. One other thing. Do you think there's any limit on what a co-defendant can do in the courtroom and so that a severance can be granted? Because you would agree that attacking counsel is a pretty extreme action.
Certainly, Your Honor. I think if you look at the totality of circumstances in some of the cases cited by the appellant, a mistrial would be warranted. But in this case, the totality of the circumstances did not warrant a mistrial, in light particularly of the way the judge protected Mr. Manning against undue bias. And even after Mr. Patterson's disruption on July 25, when the court, the government then made a motion to bar Mr. Manning from the courtroom, and when the court to bar Mr. Patterson from the courtroom, and when the court invited Mr. Manning to offer an opinion on that, Mr. Manning did not join in that motion, and Mr. Patterson did return to court on the 27th.
And then did the government ever move for a mistrial?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. McClure, I want to just follow up so that I understand your comment about Mr. Manning not commenting on the removal of Mr. Patterson. What comment would he be making? I perhaps I'm not following your line of thought. You said he made no comment on the issue of his removal, Mr. Patterson?
I believe that when Mr. Patterson had disrupted the proceedings on July 25th,
yes,
before he returned to testify, the government had made a motion asking that he not be allowed back in the courtroom, but that he testify through a hookup from the MCC. Mm-hmm. When the judge was considering that motion, she asked Mr. Manning's attorney what Mr. Manning's position was on that motion, and Mr. Manning...
Well, you know, I'm a little familiar with this area. There's an obligation on the court when you have removed a defendant to make regular inquiry about returning. That's the court's obligation. I'm not quite understanding why Mr. Manning has an obligation shared with the court. I mean, his counsel may or may not register an objection, but if you remove somebody from the court, which is permitted under Illinois versus Allen, it's the court that makes the periodic inquiry about return. Why would you be offloading that responsibility to counsel?
Well, I don't know that the court was actually giving the responsibility to Mr. Manning as to what her decision would be, but she certainly invited him to weigh in at that point.
Well, if Mr. Patterson had attacked the court reporter, do you think you should ask defense counsel whether or not he or she has some view of the appropriateness of keeping the co-defendant in place because they've attacked the court reporter?
Well, I think that in this case, the trial court was proper in asking Mr. Manning if he had any opinion on this. Because Mr. Manning already had made a motion for a mistrial and severance based upon Mr. Patterson's disruption.
Would the government agree that at least the assault became something of what we would call a matter of kind rather than degree? Whatever Mr. Patterson did in the run-up to the assault, it did become something else when we have a physical assault in the courtroom. Is that what you say?
I would agree that a physical assault in the courtroom is cause for concern, and I think that the trial judge...
Have we had any recorded in the last two or three decades mm-hmm. in the building?
No. Not that I know of, Your Honor, but
well, I mean,
my knowledge...
Well, I mean from the case law. I'm not asking for personal knowledge. I've been in the building a long time, so I don't recall the last time we had an assault on counsel. But in any event, it is unique, is it not?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
I mean, jurors would not normally... Whatever their response of would not be in their background, even if they had sat on a half a dozen criminal trials, which probably they had not.
That's in this building. That is true, Your Honor.
In any building, I mean, jurors would not expect to come to court and see that event. I'm suggesting this is a kind of a singular event, mm-hmm. and to comment on the inaction of defense counsel prior to that with a disruptive co-defendant. Where the focus, it seems to me, is a judicial responsibility. But I appreciate the need for the co-defendant's counsel to protect his counsel. When we get to an assault, it seems to me we have a little different thing. It's not in a series in the sense of one bad thing, one bad thing, one bad thing. We got a terrible thing when we get to the assault.
Yes, Your Honor, but it was after that assault that Mr. Manning still declined to have Mr. Patterson
after he testified. Manning testified on the next day, and it says that during his testimony, the gallery was vocal. What was that? What was that? Were you there?
I was not there, Your Honor.
What does that mean, was vocal?
I don't know if that means that they were supportive of Mr. Manny or that they were making noise there or what that means.
I don't understand. How could she tolerate a misbehaving gallery after the fight? What is this? This is a circus, right?
Well, Your Honor, I think that the trial judge exercised her discretion in a manner that protected against undue prejudice. This was not a close case in terms of evidence in that Mr. Manny was on a video.
You could have a rational jury after the fight and after the continued vocalism or whatever that exactly that means of the gallery.
Well, I don't know if that meant just that the gallery was making
noise. Kind of important, isn't it? It was enough for her to admonish the gallery. So what was going on?
Well, I've been in court.
Who are those people in the gallery?
The record talked about having family and friends of the defendants.
What
in the
about
gallery?
This death row, this former death row inmate, an activist? He wasn't the first one who intimidated the juror, was he? Wasn't he a second intimidator?
I believe that he was the one that the marshal brought to the court's attention. And that was the day of the voir dire of the jury.
The same person who the juror said had been staring at her.
I thought so, Your Honor, because it was the same day. It was July 21st that the juror said that, and then on July 22nd, the marshal brought it up to the judge that the day before that man had been staring at the jurors. So from the record, it certainly looked like the same person.
And was he excluded from the whole trial or just from that day?
From that day on, he was barred from the building, Your Honor.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Smith.
Thank you.
Mr. Casey, how much time does he have? 1 minute?
Your Honor, just a brief factual point. Manny was present under my read of the record, only for the second voir dire after Mr. Patterson's outburst. I don't believe he was in the room on the first when Judge Pallmeyer asked about the fears of the gallery.
So he was not there.
No, because I read the record.
Yeah, I think that's a big distinction to make.
I understand.
I think it could be intimidating, have a defendant there, and the whole issue is intimidation.
I understand.
Okay.
If you look in our appendix between pages 22 and 84, there are at least seven different jurors who discussed their fears of the gallery or having overheard fears of the gallery. So the last point I would make is that the government's own lawyers, after Mr. Patterson's outburst, expressed to the judge that they were no longer comfortable with the seating arrangement in the courtroom, that they didn't want to have their backs to Mr. Patterson, given his antics. We just don't see how any reasonable jurist could conclude that, based on human experience and logic, Mr. Manny was given a fair trial based on the evidence.
Didn't Patterson come back and testify?
He did, and hijacked his cross-examination. I'm sorry?
How was he dressed? In what form was he permitted back into the courtroom?
I was not in the trial, Your Honor. There's no indication of that I've seen in the record. I've not seen that indication.
Do you have occasion to interview the trial counsel in this case?
I did not, Your Honor.
Okay. I'm sorry.
I forgot the question I had.
Sorry.
It's okay.
I know. I wanted to know how long would the case against Manny have... How long did the trial... You know, with all these starts and stops and all that, how long was the evidence in the case? Do you know?
The trial lasted 12 days.
12 days.
I don't know when you subtract out the starts and stops what it would have been. I know that the judge certainly felt she had underestimated
the amount of time.
That's
but
right.
But for Manny, you know, as I understand the record and in terms of his role, I mean, his main thing was that videotape deal, wasn't it? So in terms of a retrial, I'm just trying to, when the court is sort of weighing, you know, severance, not that that is necessarily a driving factor. So we're talking maybe 3 days to try him.
I think that's probably true, and certainly it's understandable. The district judge, as most judges, was trying to avoid that. But in this case, I think that the downside would not have been great, and there's just no reasonable assurance that the jury could have found based on the evidence. So we ask respectfully for a reversal.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Casey and Ms. Mecklenburg. And Mr. Casey, so you were appointed, and we are very grateful for your efforts on behalf of the court.